Welcome to episode 11 of Lessons from a Horse. In this episode, I'll be interviewing my friend and fellow horse trainer, Deanna Prius. Deanna is a trainer and advocate of the horse, focusing on biomechanics, happy horses, and healthy movement. Using her degree in biological sciences, as well as many equine-specific anatomy courses and classical training programs, she works the horse's body in a way that aims towards keeping them happy and healthy in their work well into old age. She lives in Freeburg, Illinois, and offers groundwork, liberty, and riding lessons, classes on anatomy and function, as well as video coaching and clinics.
Welcome, Deanna, to our podcast, Lessons from a Horse. I'm so excited to have you here today and excited to talk with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Why don't you just get started by telling us a little bit about yourself, your background with horses, how you got started with horses, and kind of the journey that led you to where you are now.
Okay. So I was born horse crazy. Into a non-horse crazy family.
Oh, me too.
So, yeah, right?
Yeah.
And fortunately for you as well, we were able to find our way there because I find so many adults now that are just now getting to their dream because they're like, I always wanted this and now I've raised my family and I have some time to do it. But yeah. I was very fortunate that I was relentless and eventually my parents gave in and got me riding lessons. And then shortly after got me my own horse. And so I feel like that's kind of when my life began, you know, that was just my purpose and what I wanted to do. And they got me this horse that was cheap and hadn't been ridden in 2 years. And he ended up just being fantastic. You know, he was definitely more horse than a beginner child should have, but oddly it worked. And he was fantastic. I had him up until 2 years ago. He, I had to put him down. He was 35 and I
was
so fortunate to have had him. He shaped my life in so many ways, you know, all the decisions I made, all the things I did and all the successes I had traced back to him. So, that was really cool. I became, a hunter jumper. That was the barn that was close by. And, we were really good at it. We were very successful at being hunter jumpers. So, then, you know, people wanted me to ride their horses or groom their horses and all these odd jobs that, you know, you get offered when you're a barn rat.
Yeah.
And so, eventually it led to, someone was like, hey, you know, will you teach at our barn there? This was, I guess I was just starting college and this barn called and they said, hey, would you want to come out and teach? And I said, yeah, I could do that. And, I really enjoyed it. You know, I was in college and, I'm a biology major. That's what my degree is in. And I really enjoyed that, but I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to do with it. And, I really enjoyed teaching. So that's what I ended up doing when I got done with college and, you know, doing this hunter jumper thing, people would come to me and they'd say, oh, you know, things are good at 2 foot, but at 2'6", it's starting to fall apart. And even at a very young age, you know, I was still in my late teens. I could see the problem wasn't because the fences went up 6 inches. The problem was there at 2 foot. It was there on the flat. It was all these things, you know, the half halts aren't going through. The horse is approaching the jump with its head in the air. It can't see anything. You know, or it's just very imbalanced. It's hanging in one shoulder. It can't make the turn. It comes around and, oh, there's a fence there and you get a refusal because the horse was not balanced and they didn't see it coming. So, I'm a firm believer that there are only so many jumps in a horse and especially when they're doing it in poor form. So I started really, working with people on the flat, fixing these things on the flat and over poles so that we could address them without then burning the horse up and using them up. Because that's a big thing is that I want these horses to be comfortable through their career for a very long career. My 35-year-old horse that I told you about, he was a hunter jumper and I didn't know nearly as much, you know, when I started, I didn't know anything and he was still sound and usable till 30. So I would address these things on the flat, but then it wasn't really well received because I think people sometimes feel like they're going a bit backwards. Mm-hmm. You know, we always want to be on this upward trajectory, like progress. And so I kind of got this reputation. People would say, ah, you know, Deanna, she's not really teaching hunter jumper. She's teaching dressage. So that was fine. But then people were coming to me and say, oh, you're a dressage instructor. Yeah. And I felt like this fraud because I had no formal training as a dressage instructor. Like my hunter jumper instructor was really pretty good about teaching us the flat work and having a good, well-rounded horse. I think more so than other hunter jumper trainers I had seen in the area. So then I felt like, well, I better take some dressage lessons because people are coming to me for this and I don't want to be a fraud. You know, I don't even know where the letters go and all these things. So that kind of started me on the path to dressage, which is kind of where we crossed paths because I was going up closer to your area and I saw a picture you posted. I'm like, I know that arena. And then we started talking.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of cool. Yeah. But that's kind of how I've gotten to where I am now. And then now it's funny because a lot of my lessons are groundwork, like work in hand type lessons, because again, my clientele has kind of shifted and I really don't get any hunter jumpers anymore, but I get a lot of people that want horses to move better because they are having problems. They're having soundness issues or behavioral issues, and or they have issues with their own body, or they're just not that interested in riding anymore, but they still want to do something with the horse and keep them fit and keep them doing things. So a lot of my lessons actually now are groundwork, or at least to fix problems before people get on, because it's just easier. It's easier to fix it on the ground for the horse to understand it and to achieve it. And then, you know, add the rider on, and then it's a lot less wear and tear on the horse. So that's kind of the evolution. It went hunter jumper, dressage, groundwork, which may seem a little backwards in some people's view, but it works.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I know you teach a lot about biomechanics and that kind of thing. How'd you get interested in that?
So, you know, I had this biology degree from a very young age too. I was interested in biology, horses and biology. So my grandma would sign me up for these little college classes, these college for kids classes, you know, and it would always be the biology classes. And then I had the advanced placement biology, like college classes in high school. And then I majored in it. And I thought it was so interesting, even though we weren't talking about horses, I thought it was really interesting. And then, you know, I ended up not doing anything with it, but conveniently enough, anatomy is pretty much anatomy in all mammals. So a lot of the muscles are the same, the bones are the same. And then I think I just working at some of these big barns that were, you know, they're just big lesson barns that, the horses, they just kind of went and did their thing. And then when they weren't usable anymore, they were gone. And I hated seeing that. And I didn't work at that kind of barn very long, but I really wanted these horses to be healthy in their bodies. And I started kind of trying to get them more symmetrical and then taking some classes. I've taken a lot of courses now that apply this biology and anatomy stuff specifically to equines. And it's been very rewarding because sometimes you can even fix behavioral issues. A lot of the behavioral issues and the spookiness and the weird things are because the horses don't feel balanced in their body or they're uncomfortable in their body. And so there's been some senior horses that we've really been able to bring back and get good muscling on. They're moving healthier. They're more sound. Some young horses that were just crippled by poor practices, you know, in certain industries that start them too young, work them too hard, put them in contraptions. But I've really seen some horses turn around and now I'm just addicted.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing to see some of the transformations in the horses, both physically and mentally, when you teach them how to use their bodies correctly and they start to feel better and healthier. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it definitely is addicting. I know what you mean. I know, you know, now that I've you know, experienced working with and riding horses that are balanced, I never want to ride anything else. You know, like if a horse isn't balanced, I'm just not going to ride them. You know, I'm going to do the groundwork, like, you know, like you were talking about the in hand work and everything, teach them how to balance correctly, and then I'll ride them. Like, I don't even want to ride an unbalanced horse because it's not enjoyable for the horse and it's not enjoyable for me. So,
I know. And the older I get, it's just like, oh my gosh, it's just hard on my body. And
it's
not fun. Yeah. But I've had some students, I've had two here recently message me, and they're like, and all we've done are groundwork lessons. Like the one, I don't even think I've seen her ride that horse. Maybe briefly, just some walk work, but it was off the track thoroughbred. Mm-hmm. And she messaged me that she rode him on her own time. And she's like, oh my gosh, he's so much more balanced. She's like, before, if I turned him loose in the arena, just on his own to run, she's like, he would fall. She would just wipe out, right? And she's like, I never wanted to get on him because he was so unbalanced. And then someone else too, she's like, oh my gosh, she's like, I feel so much more organized because my horse is more organized. I'm like, yes, for sure, because when those horses are leaning and they're hollow and they're bouncy and they're falling into a shoulder, it just, you can't organize your own body. It's just a train wreck. So it's rewarding to see other people seeing it too.
Definitely. That's awesome. Very cool. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing now? I know we kind of touched on it a little bit, but what you're doing now and what you offer and that kind of thing.
Okay. So I used to always say I was a horse trainer, and sometimes like when I have to fill out an application on something, you know, I still put horse trainer, but I actually feel like I'm more of a people trainer.
Really? That's awesome. And then you get all the crazy questions.
But now I just tell them I'm a people trainer, like when I'm talking to horse people, but I don't put that on applications because then people are like, what? That's weird. But I'm a people trainer, and I feel like I'm an interpreter because there's just so much miscommunication.
Like
So I offer in-person lessons and then also virtual coaching, which I think a few years ago, I don't know that I was ready to handle to take those kind of lessons or to give those kind of lessons. But you know, in this post-COVID world we live in now, I know that my tech skills have greatly increased. And so I started working with my instructor virtually because she's in Germany and she could not come over here for years. So it was really great. I would just film myself and clip parts out that I'm like, I don't understand why I'm struggling here or what can I do to make this better. And then we meet on Zoom and we go through it moment by moment and, you know, say, okay, do you see this here where it's starting to fall apart? This is what you could do to improve this. And for me, it's such a great way to learn because it's almost like this third party perspective where I can see it from the outside and not be having to then hold the horse and pay attention to a horse. I can just fully absorb and I can play it back. You know, we can replay it again. When you're live, I mean, live is great as well, but when you're live and the trainer says, did you feel that? And you're like,
I don't know.
So I started offering that as well. And it's great. And I do it for all levels of people. I have people that, you know, they want to do liberty type work. They want to do groundwork, just manners. You're not even necessarily work in hand, but just better manners and also riding work. So I'm really enjoying that. And it's just so much more flexible because then we can meet at weird hours, you know, like 8 o'clock at night. I don't normally do lessons at 8 o'clock at night in person, but on Zoom, I can put my daughter to bed and then I can do a lesson. So it works out really well. I also offer like classes on anatomy and function, and I try to keep them kind of like bite-sized classes, like an hour-ish. And then people can absorb it better, I think. If it's too much, sometimes it's a lot to absorb. So I have these classes in bite-sized chunks, and they're all standalone classes, but they do build nicely on each other. So I offer that in person and in clinics. And then we did just recently do one as a webinar on the internet, and it went over really well. So I think we might do that again. When I say we, a friend of mine, she's become a friend. We are more of an acquaintance before, but she has a company called Hug Your Horse, and she's a certified leather tree fitter for Hidalgo saddles. And those are fantastic saddles. They're all I've been using for 3 years, but anyway, she and I often do clinics together as well, because it just pairs so nicely. We complement each other so well, because oftentimes people call me because they think they have a training issue, and it's not a training issue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a saddle fit issue. It's a like a feeding lifestyle type issue. Horses aren't getting out enough. It's a discomfort issue. Mm-hmm. So that helps a lot, because horses can't move properly if their saddle doesn't fit. So she talks a lot about the anatomy as well, as far as what that's affecting you, and right down to like the girth and everything. And then what she does, she'll go to saddle fittings and she'll see these horses that are just moving in this hollow posture that are unbalanced. And no matter what saddle you put on them, it's not going to just fix them and make them drop their head and lift their back. So she can say, well, you know, we got a saddle that fits nicely, but really you have this issue as well. Yeah, so we really bounce off of each other, and we've been clinic together as well. And it goes really well. So we've been traveling and having a really good time.
Awesome. Very cool. All right. So would you like to share something with us about what horses have taught you, you know, during your life, that has kind of affected you, or influenced your life outside of horses?
I don't even know who I would be if I didn't have horses. Like, it's just influenced everything. Like, it has just shaped who I am.
Yeah.
And I said something the other day, because my daughter doesn't have the horse bug, which is okay. But you know how you're either born with it or you're not.
Yeah.
And I was like, we are crazy. And my husband said, like the stuff that you guys do and how hard you guys work to do this.
Right. Well, you know, like I always say, you have to be a little bit crazy to willingly get on a 1,000-pound prey animal that is afraid of everything.
So I don't even know what I would, I don't even know what my life would be like if I didn't have horses. So I did try to think about it a little bit though, as far as what horses have done that I feel like has shaped me. And I feel like acceptance is a big part of that, you know, because we can always wish that things are different, you know, or life isn't fair, and we just have to work with what we've got and we have to be grateful for that. And so I just don't think there's time for pity parties, you know, when it comes to horses. Like, I think we can all get into that pity party mindset, but with horses, it just, you can't, there's no time for it. It doesn't matter if you're sick. It doesn't matter if you're hurt. It doesn't matter if you've had some big tragedy. Life does not pause when you have horses. Like, it's chin up and keep going, you know, no matter what. And so I think that has definitely shaped me to handle those kind of things better. It's like, well, I could wish it was different, but it's not. So now we just keep going forward, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that comes with a lot of us horsewomen, that we're very tough, you know, we're very resilient because we have to be. And we see this with horses every day. We love these creatures deeply and have them for a very long time, but then we live longer than them. And so it's chin up and keep going. I think they've also taught me to be very present, you know, because everyone is so busy now, but you get it too. Like you're a mom, you're running a barn, you have horses to take care of, you have a farm of things that need to be fixed, that need to be done, hay needs to be put up, whatever. There's always a million things to do. It never stops. Dishes, laundry, all of it. So horses, I think, make us very present. And I feel like that can be a little bit meditative, which I need in my life. And so I actually Googled what Google said what meditation is for. And it said, the purpose of meditation is to give a sense of calm, peace, and balance that can benefit both your emotional well-being and overall health. You can also use it to relax and cope with stress by refocusing your attention on something calming. Meditation can help you stay centered and keep inner peace. And I thought, that's horses. At least for me, that's horses.
Awesome.
So I know I can literally be working horses in the arena and not even notice that someone has walked up to the fence and is waiting to talk to me, or that they have pulled up in their car, because I don't even notice until I get to that part of the fence and I catch them in my peripheral vision, because I'm just so into just doing this one thing.
Yeah.
And all the rest of my life, I'm like, oh, I need to add this to the grocery list. Oh, I need to make sure I get this horse put over here, and I need to rotate pastures, and I need to drag and all these things. So being present is definitely something that the horses have taught me, because otherwise I'd probably be like a pinball off of everything. And I had a horse when I was in college. I was going to school and I was working two jobs, and I had my original thoroughbred that I was still showing, and then I had this off the track thoroughbred that I had just bought, and he was just really right off the track, and he was quite hot, you know, and just all the baggage that comes, the mental baggage that comes with those horses that come off the track. And so I would think, okay, I've got this much time before I have to get to class or before I have to get to work, I'm going to work my horse. And he was just so hot anyway that I didn't get anywhere. I didn't get anything accomplished because I was in a hurry and he was in a hurry.
Yeah.
And so it was a turning point for me to realize that if I have 40 minutes, then I act like I have all the time in the world and I get accomplished what I get accomplished. And that was huge for me, just to change your mindset and to focus and be present and do that one thing and not be worried about the rest of the to-do list. And that, that was the most valuable lesson that horse taught me, for sure.
Yeah. I think horses kind of force us to learn that lesson, because you really, they're on their own timeline, and the more you try and rush it, the worse it gets. So
you
have to kind of let go of that. Need to get things done in a certain amount of time, and just do what you can and be okay with that.
Let go of those expectations, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a lesson I'm still learning all the time.
I think we all are.
And I mean, they've taught me not to be so goal oriented, that it takes as long as it takes. So we do what we can. My instructor, she's great, because she's kind of my personality, like, flip side, you know, like I tend to be a little bit wound tight, and she's just so calm and grounded, which is perfect for me. So she has this beautiful quote, and I actually have it on a post-it on my desk, because I need to read it frequently, but she says, avoid letting the horse pull us into conflict or confusion, but always invite them toward our calm center. And I think that just applies to life.
That's awesome. I mean, you could apply that to your relationship with anybody.
For sure.
Yeah.
Just to kind of have that pause.
Yeah.
And observe without reacting, or before reacting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So have there been any struggles or triumphs that you've had in your journey with the horses that you'd like to share with us that kind of had an impact on you? There have probably been a lot, I'm sure, but if you can think of one or two.
I don't feel like, I try to be an optimist, you know, I try to look at the bright side of stuff, but I think in this industry, there's just always this struggle of, this is physically hard. Mm-hmm. You know, we are working long days in the weather. Like I said, sometimes when we don't feel well, so there's always this physical struggle. And it's financially hard. Horses are not cheap. Horses are not cheap at all. And they do things that are not cheap.
Right.
So there's always that little,
always breaking.
yes. Equipment's breaking. Just when you think things are going good, and then you're like, oh, the tractor's not working, or the truck's not working, or whatever. So there's always this grind. And there's an emotional struggle to it too. Like we have a lot on our shoulders. Mm. So I think we all go through that. But I think sometimes, like, my biggest personal struggle is that when I see something, you know, in a horse that's moving in an unhealthy way, or I want it more for the owner than they're ready for, you know, because of experience, you know, I can kind of see into the future a little bit.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I want it more, and maybe their priorities aren't in the same place as my priorities, that struggle to kind of say, yeah, this isn't going to work, and have it to, like, walk away from that, or just let it go. That I think that's always an ongoing struggle, because you do things very similarly to the way I do things. It's not this, I don't show anymore. I don't have this agenda. Or sometimes people come to me and they're like, yeah, but I just want him to stop doing this. But he's doing that because
right.
Of all these other things we need to address. But I don't want to address those. I just want him to stop doing this. So for me, that's the biggest struggle, because I really, you know, I'm an empath. I can really feel these things. And so that to me is just kind of the, I don't know if it's a daily struggle, but that's a big struggle that I feel like with what we do. But I mean, other struggles, I like to look at it more as like a puzzle or a challenge, because I think it's less depressing to think of it that way than to think, oh, I have this struggle. Why me? And why is everything so hard? And why did this happen again? Or whatever. If I just flip it a little bit in my mind and say, what is this showing me? Or how can I tackle this in a different way? To me, it keeps me out of that pity party mindset, you know?
Yeah.
So I like those puzzles. My gray and illusion that I post pictures of all the time. He's been a struggle.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, he's not the horse that I thought that I had this picture in my head, you know? And that goes right back with expectations. Uh-huh. Having these expectations just sets us up for failure. And so that's something else that horses have taught me. It's just take it at face value and chin up and keep going forward. But I've had horses since my parents bought me that very first horse. I've had horses, but then they were lesson horses, and I still have them. I keep them all until they pass away. They weren't like my personal horses, project horse. They were like, you know, quiet little kid horses that, you know, were more woe than go. And I love them very much, but they're not like my horse that I'm working with. I was in college and I was poor. I had that off the track thoroughbred, and I found him a lovely home. And then I didn't have anything else for me. So I was in college and I was poor. And then my husband and I got married and we were poor. And then we were building a house and we were poor. And then
had we started a kid and you were poor.
Started a family. So this was a long time coming, you know, and this again kind of sets you up for failure when you have all this buildup. And so I bought him as a yearling because horses are not cheap, especially when you buy the Andalusians. Iberian is expensive. That's my taste. It's not high end anything. It's Iberian.
Yeah.
So I bought him as a yearling, sight unseen, but it did, you know, I talked with the breeder for a long time. She sent me video. When I say we talked for a long time, we talked for months because it was really cold and snowy there and she couldn't get me video and I was in no hurry. And so he came off the trailer insane from the minute he came off the trailer, insane. And so I just kept making these excuses in my head, you know, I'm like, well, you know, he's still a stud. I'll geld him when he gets a little older. And, you know, all these things, I kept thinking, well, as he matures, he'll get better. And he's a fire horse, you know, that fire personality where one little thing, you know, they just, if it's one little thing, it just drives them insane, you know, where the earth horse is like, oh, okay, sure. I'll keep going. But the fire horse, man, they let you know. But
yes, they do.
He has greatly increased my knowledge, and he's been quite humbling because I don't know, maybe I thought I had it pretty well figured out before. And he was here to show me that, no, you don't. So he's been a struggle, and it's that mental physical connection because physically he's just not quite right. Like, and I have seen this since he was young, and he's been looked at by many, many veterinarians, and nobody really knows. Like, he's just kind of wonky, and nobody even thinks he's in pain, because if he was in pain, he would certainly let you know. But it's just this imbalance. Like, anytime he would go down hills, like a slope, like just leading him, he was just couldn't keep himself organized, you know? And so it's just been this process of learning. And then when he gets unbalanced, then his mind is exploding. So he really has made me think outside the box. From the minute he got here, it was like, okay, let's go to plan B. Let's go to plan C. Let's go. We have gone all the way through the alphabet with this horse. But for a while I was a bit, having a pity party where I said, oh gosh, I waited so long and I waited so long to start him. And I spent all this money and I wanted this horse that was going to be this all around quiet horse that could take places and show people and they could work with him and do all these things. And he wasn't checking that box, you know, which sets you up for failure when you have this expectation. So I just have had to pivot and realize that this is my learning horse. You know, they've all taught me something, but this is my learning horse. And he has opened so many doors and so many opportunities. And I have met so many people because of this horse that now by letting go of those expectations of what I had, I'm much happier, you know, and he's doing much better. He's always going to be this kind of quirky guy. But he's taught me so much. Like he's just, because of him, you know, I told you he's a fire horse and anything that isn't quite right, he lets you know. And so when I started him, and I started him so slow, but I couldn't find the saddles that fit him. Like they physically fit when you looked at it, it fit. He's not a terribly shaped horse to fit in general, you know, some of them have really short backs or whatever, but he wasn't hard to fit, but he just would complain. He's like, I don't like this. And so he was growing all the time. And so I tried some adjustable saddles and I look at it, I'm like, gosh, this fits. I don't know why you're not happy, but I'd send it back and then try something else. Yeah. And so I had a friend who actually I met again because of him. And she was a big trainer. She was coming up from Alabama. And I said, hey, do you have any saddles that you think would fit this guy? And she said, well, I got this, and I got this, and I got this Spanish saddle. I said, bring the Spanish saddle. And so I didn't know much about it at the time, but I put it on him and I rode him and he was happy. And I was like, I will take it. She didn't know it's a leather tree saddle. So it will adjust to the horse. Okay. And I was like, perfect, because he is still growing. And so, you know, happily ever after, he was happy with this saddle and I rode in it for like a year. And then I hadn't heard of it. I hadn't heard of this. I hadn't heard of leather trees. I hadn't heard of this company. So one night I was on the internet and I had had a glass of wine and I thought, I'm just going to message this company and see, you know, hey, why haven't I heard of you guys?
Yeah.
So she messaged me back the next day and she's like, well, she's like, we would like to have more in the US. Do you want to be a distributor? And I said, no, I don't. Yeah. I have enough hats. I don't want to. No.
Yeah.
But we developed this relationship. And so I'm the Hidalgo US test rider. And then I ended up finding Tiffany, who's been the distributor for US and Canada, that has brought this over here. And, you know, and Gustavo, my gray horse, is on, you know, a lot of the pictures and the ads and stuff because of his fire horse personality, because of him not liking certain things. And that's okay. Yeah. Like, I'd rather have a horse that says, hey, this is not working for me.
Right. At least you know. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not an opportunity I would have ever had with this quiet, perfect horse I had in my brain, you know?
Yeah.
So he's not a struggle. He's a challenge. And he will always be a challenge. He's eight and I started him at three. When I say started, just walking him, and he really was not ready.
Yeah.
He wasn't ready mentally and he wasn't ready physically.
Yeah.
So then I started him. Then I gave him that winter off. And then as a four-year-old, we did some stuff, some walk and trot, and he was doing pretty good. And then as a five-year-old, he got real butt high again. And that wonkiness was coming back and his stifles were real catchy. And I just thought, you know, he's not the kind of horse that you can just walk around casually on. Like, I think some hills and stuff would have probably been good for him, but he was just personality wise. That was not something that was going to work. So I just gave him his five-year-old year off from riding. And I still did some groundwork, you know, keep him strong, try to keep those stifles a little bit stronger because I see it in the stifles, but that's not where it is. I'm very familiar with catchy stifles and this is a bit different. So anyway, then that was his five-year-old year he had off. And then his six-year-old year got on him again. And then he had this weird behavior. He would do this like mouth gaping kind of thing, you know, like it was really odd. And he would do it when he was stressed, you know, and when I say stressed, just you ask him something he doesn't quite know. And if he doesn't have an answer and if you've pushed a little too much, he's like, oh, and he would do this behavior, but he was doing it all the time. Like I would look at the cameras in the barn you know, when nobody was in there and he was doing it to the other horses. And it was just really odd. And again, he had been doing this for a while, and I asked many people about it, and nobody really had answers for it. So I kept saying to the chiropractor, I said, his TMJ is not right. TMJ is not right. The next time she come back, and I'm like, it's still not right. It didn't change anything. It's not right. And she really got to palpating and feeling. And she was like, feel this. And then she's like, feel this side. And I'm like, I'm not finding that on that side. And she's like, yeah. She's like, I said, is that a melanoma? And she said, no, I think you have an ear tooth. She's like, you need to get some x-rays. And I'm like, of course, my horse would have an ear tooth. So we did some x-rays, and it turns out it was not an ear tooth, but it was a melanoma. And he already had melanoma under his tail, you know, at such a very young age. And I think it goes a lot with his stressy personality that stress does not help with that.
Right.
So he went in. I took him to the university for surgery to have this one removed by his TMJ. It was actually in the joint capsule, which is really rare.
Yeah.
So I think that could very much be contributing to this bit of wonkiness, because you've taken the courses. The TMJ is so highly innervated, and it's so involved with proprioception, and he's not clumsy. Like, he doesn't fall or trip. He doesn't even trip. It's just sometimes you have to really get him organized, because he just almost a bit disconnected front to back.
Okay.
So, again, just another thing pushing me out of my comfort zone, because, you know, taking a horse that far is always stressful to me. And then having him at a university, I've never taken a horse to a university before. Yeah. He was able to get all of it out, and he's much better. He doesn't do that behavior rarely. If he gets really pumped up about something, and it took a while for that to go away.
Yeah.
But it cropped up again. I took him to a clinic with my instructor, and I think he got a little bit ulcery, and so he started doing that again. That it's just kind of his thing to say something's not right, this mouse behavior. Mm. So took him to the university, or took him and got some ulcer meds, and now it's gone away, and it rarely ever crops up. So sometimes if I let somebody do a lesson with him, one of my students, to do an in-work or in-hand lesson with him, and they're not, you know, they're, it's new to them. He's new to them, and they're a bit unclear. This is just how it goes. Right. He will show that behavior, because he gets a little stressed, like, I don't know what you want, you know, but otherwise he's not doing it like he was before, where it was just like on the cameras and stuff. So that was his 6-year-old year. And then last year, I feel like we finally got something going. But I just had to change my perspective, because that could be very depressing and defeating whatever. But I choose to look at the direction that he's taken me, which my amount of knowledge and the searches I have gone on have taught me so much that, you know, maybe more than any other horse. I'm not sure, but definitely different things than any other horse.
Yeah. That's awesome. I can relate, because my first horse that I got was also an Andalusian, and he was older, but he had some not so nice training, and similar, where he was very, very reactive to anything that he didn't like, and some body issues too, and using his body correctly, and then also the mental issues. And he totally transformed the way that I do everything. I can relate to kind of getting that dream horse, and then it's not really exactly what you thought it was going to be. But, you know, you just kind of go with it. And he taught me so much. And I can definitely relate to that. I think, you know, I think what they can teach us is so amazing. And, I definitely wouldn't be where I am now without him. So I'm thankful, even though at the time it was not always easy and sometimes frustrating and that kind of thing. But I'm definitely grateful for those experiences.
For sure. Yeah, it's that acceptance. Just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And we move forward with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Iberian horses, just, they hold you so much more accountable. Like, they're so much more sensitive. And they are, I don't know if less tolerant is the right word, but they just, you have to bring your A game.
How do I want to put this? They respond to everything. You know, they're not going to just ignore it if you do something that they don't like, you know, like some horses will. You know, they're going to let you know. I'm much more sensitive and but great teachers.
Yeah.
If you're willing to listen to them.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. And you got a new horse recently too, didn't you?
I did. I got another Andalusian, and my only stipulation was that it had to be big enough for me, which I don't love huge horses, but I am 6'1", so I can't have something 14'2".
Sure.
So it had to be, you know, 16-ish hands or so. Sure. Well, expected to be that at maturity. And I didn't care if it was a mare or gel or a colt. You know, there wasn't a whole lot except not gray, unfortunately. I got to slow down on the surgeries over here.
Yeah. So,
he's a chestnut, which is really quite rare for Andalusian. And I just love him. I mean, and I'm not one to just like love things easily. You know, I like things, but I mean, I just love him. I love his personality. I'm so pleased with myself, actually. I'm like, I went and saw this one in person, but I just like the way he carries himself. I like the way he reacts to things. He's 2 and he's still intact. And right now I don't necessarily need a stallion, but he hasn't given me a reason to geld him yet. So we'll see. That will,
yeah.
You know, I kind of like the way they grow better that way too. So I've been real happy with him. And I mean, I haven't done much, just, you know, we learned what fly spray was and getting hosed off and, you know, standing by the mounting block. We've got time. I'm not going to start him. I'm not going to start him until he's 4 at least. But when I say that, it's not like I just one day I'm like, okay, now you need to be a riding horse.
Right,
like
exactly.
Everything is this preparation right now. Like,
and there's so many things you can do, you know, without actually riding them. That's going to set them up. You know, to be ready to be ridden. I remember when I got on my, she was 4 at the time. She's 6 now, crazy. But when I got on her the first time, she was just like, okay, this is what we're doing now. I'm a riding horse now. And exactly. It was like this uneventful, like wonderful thing. And you know, we just went off and within the first couple of rides, we were able to walk, trot, canter and do a little lateral work. But it's all that preparation that goes into it, that stuff that you're starting now, you know, and the months and months and months of handling them and preparing them for that moment. It's not like you just, you know, throw the saddle on and hop on and, you know,
I know. It's just such a, I mean, it's such a more enjoyable way for me, and it's got to be more enjoyable for them. You know, I think we've probably all done it, the 30 days training on a horse, you know, and even then I feel like I did a pretty good job. Like I wanted them to be so used to things that there was never any bucking when I put the saddle on, but I mean, in 30 days I'd have a horse.
It's not much you can do in 30 days.
You know, and it's not the way I want to do it anymore for sure. Like that was 20 years ago, but it's just so much easier and you get a better finished product, and it takes longer when you think like, oh my gosh, you've been training this horse for years, but what's the alternative? Like you have a horse that went somewhere for a short period of time, but now it's like, it's not used to any exposure to things. It's not, doesn't stand well at the mounting block. You know, it's spooky, it's unbalanced, it's all these things. And then that just puts more physical wear and tear on them because they're posturally not carrying themselves in a way that's healthy for riding. You have a horse with the horizontal spine, and then you have this person that's a vertical pressure downward on these young horses that aren't physically prepared for it. It's quite detrimental, especially when you look at the growth plates in the spine are running up and down. So it's almost like this shear force, and those are the last ones to close. So yeah, even when I say I'm going to start mine, most likely, I mean, nothing's set in stone, but I say I'm going to start them at 4. When I say start them at 4, I'm going to get on a walk around for 5 or 10 minutes. You know, it's not like, oh, we're going to start, you know, bullfighting it.
Right. Awesome. Cool. Well, sounds like you're going to have a lot of fun with him.
I'm hoping. I'm excited.
Yeah.
And Gustavo, the other one, I think he paved the way because
yeah.
I'm such a better trainer for the other one. So
Awesome. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with us about your experiences or things you've learned from the horses or anything like that?
I think horses are just really good for our personal growth, you know, that we always keep learning. Like, I am never done learning. Like, somebody said to me the other day, they want to get horses. And she's like, oh, she's like, I got some stuff to learn. And I was like, oh, let me just tell you now. It doesn't stop. It never stops. I've been doing this for 30 years and it never stops.
Definitely. Yeah, they teach us a lot about ourselves too, and things that, like, I don't know, I think I've learned more about myself from my horses than anything else. And, you know, things that, you know, maybe wouldn't necessarily have worked on or addressed, that the horses kind of forced me to face and deal with and that kind of thing. So yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And my trainer had said something too about, like, we have to be the trainer that horse needs. And so, you know, I just feel like I have a big bubble. Like, I'm a lot for some people and I'm a lot for some horses, and I have to really reel it in and tame myself down a little bit for certain horses. You know, Gustavo, with that fire horse personality, I've got a lot of fire personality too, and so I have to really breathe and go slower. I've got another off the track thoroughbred mare that I work with, and it's so funny, if I take her and I haven't consciously thought about this, she's actually like, I kind of like sucks back, you know, like, and I'm like, oh, sorry. Let me down a couple notches. And it's like, and her owner's complete different personality than me. And her owner gets a lot of good stuff out of her naturally because they're a good match personality wise, as far as the mare's a little hot and the owner's very calm and grounded, where I'm a little bit hot and I have to turn myself down. Cause she's like, oh, I don't, what do you want? And I haven't even asked anything yet. I'm like, oh, sorry, dear. So yeah, it definitely makes us, I think it makes us a better balanced person.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. All right. Well, I've got a couple more questions for you here to wrap us up today. So you can just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. These are just short answer. Just kind of get to know you questions.
Okay.
So, speaking of learning, what is one thing you've learned recently?
So this, you know, I don't know. I didn't really think about this, but I don't know. I didn't think the skull, when we look at the horse's skull, there's all these plates and different bones, and there's sutures, which are like the joints in the skull. And I never really thought about it, but the back part of the skull, the occiput, it doesn't fuse to the head, like it's to the skull as a unit, as one piece, until they're like 3 to 5 years old.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, you think about that, and your halter runs over the top of that, right behind the pole. And then you think of these horses where people just tie them up and they're like, tie them with the bungee and let them fight it out, that type of thing. Oh man, I just, you know, I think about growth plates all the time, but I'm looking more at the body growth plates, and I'd never really thought about the skull. And I was like, that's amazing and scary all at the same time.
Yeah.
You never want them to have a pullback injury, but now when you see, I mean, it's not like it's just floating there, but after the decomposition, it really is two pieces. Like in the live horse, it's not just two separate pieces, you know, there's tissues holding it together, but it's not solid like a regular bone that you think about. So that was something that I thought was really cool.
Yeah. Good things to be aware of when you think about how much that relates to how we work with and handle our horses, like you were saying.
Yeah, we can do so much damage, you know, and it's not like, and I teach these classes like this to educate people, and I don't want people to ever feel bad because we've all done it, you know, we've all done things that we didn't know better, but the horses are so kind to us that the least we can do is educate ourselves and educate them in a way that's going to keep them healthy and comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a balance between forgiving yourself for what you did when you didn't know any better, but also always trying to learn more so that you can be better.
Yeah, agreed. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Share a favorite horse memory. That's probably a lot.
Yeah. I guess one that really like sticks out in my head. So, you know, I wanted a horse for so long when I was little, and we went, and we didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up. So we would go look at horses, and they were just, I would love the horse, but it was too much. And so I was getting kind of defeated, because when you're 10, you love every horse, you know, I'm like, I want this right. one, but the price was never right. And so we went and we looked at Boomer, who was the one that I was telling you about that I got. And he hadn't been ridden in 2 years. He really didn't have any training, but so the price was right. And so we didn't have a horse trailer at the time, but the guy we bought him from was going to trailer him to the barn. And of course, you know, it took, I don't even know how long to get him in the trailer, because he just didn't have any training or any manners. So we get him, they finally get him in the trailer, and we're following the trailer. You know how you can see the horse's butt there, and my dad's driving, and I'm sitting there. I said, "Dad, you know what? That's my horse's butt." And it just always stuck with me, because I was just like so happy. I was like, that's like all I wanted. Yeah.
That's cute. Awesome. What is a book you are reading right now or have read recently? Or if you do more podcasts and audiobooks, that kind of thing.
So right now I'm reading Horse Brain, Human Brain.
Ah, that's a good one.
Yeah. I know. I saw that you had read it. Another friend of mine read it, and I'm like, okay, I need to get this book. So I'm working on it. This is not the reading time of year. So I'm not super deep into it yet, but it's very good. I'm really enjoying it. I like to learn, because here's the problem. And I mean, maybe you're the same way. I'm working all day, especially working in the heat. If I start reading, I've got 20 or 30 minutes before I fall asleep. And I don't care where I am. I'm not even reading in bed.
Yeah. So, that's why I do a lot of the audiobooks and stuff.
I do a lot of like classes and courses. So like I'll take in-person classes or some online courses.
Sure.
So I did the straightness training mastery program a few years ago, which I love. Mm. And I currently work a couple times a month with a straightness training instructor, and that's a great program. And so I did that one, and it took me a good year to get through that. All the content, because there's a lot in that one.
That's an intensive program.
Yeah, for sure. And then I just got done with Zephania Vermolin's The Horse Inside Out. And so I've taken a lot of her single classes through COVID. They were online classes, like a hour and a half type webinar type thing. But then she had this online course with lots of chapters. And then that one was pretty in depth too. It took me, I just finished it. That probably took me six or eight months, I bet, to get through all of it, which I mean, it just depends how much time you have, but I would try to chip away at it at least a couple times a week. So that one I have really enjoyed. And then I did this spring, I did a 3-day class in person in Aiken, South Carolina, which I'm in Illinois. So that I've been all over the country this year, but I did a 3-day dissection with Dr. Sharon Mae Davis.
Yeah.
That one I knew. Oh my gosh. It was fantastic. I was like the first person there every day, like waiting. Can I come in? Can I come in? I was the last person to leave. Like, do you need help with anything? Can I do something? It was 3 11-hour days.
Oh, wow.
And my husband went with me, because sometimes he just likes to go because he can work remotely in the hotel his job. He can work remotely. Sure. Or he'll just go explore new areas, you know, and go do cool things while I'm doing my classes.
Right.
And so he would just drop me off each morning and come back and get me. And we would go out to dinner, and I'm like, I don't even know. I can't read this menu. Just get me chicken. I have no more brain cells to even read this menu. There's like a lot of things on here, and I can't handle it right now. It was so much information. Like, she is, I mean, it's just almost not human, the amount of stuff that she knows and the things she remembers. And she can just spout these things off, origins and insertions and And the fact that too, whenever my husband would come to pick me up, she's like, oh, Jeff's here. And I'm like, there are like 20 of us in the room and you remember my name, but you're also remembering my husband's name when he comes to pick me up. She's very gifted. Like she, you know, she's got one of those super brains. So that was really cool. And then now I'm actually, since I just finished The Horses Inside Out, which that's more of anatomy dissection stuff. I'm going back into the straightness training and starting the program all over again because, you know, when you have this information, you can only absorb what you're ready for. So I've applied years of this knowledge from the first time I did it and working with the straightness training instructor, I have all these experiences. Now I know I'm going to go back and watch that same information and read that same information and get more from it that I was not ready for the first time. So
Definitely kind of have a new perspective on things.
Exactly.
All right. Okay. This is my favorite question. If you could share a message with the world, what would it be? And it can be horse related or just the world in general.
I think the horses are always communicating with us and we just have to be willing to listen. You know, I think the signs are always there. And that's kind of a universe thing too. Sometimes you keep hearing the same song on the radio or you keep seeing the same numbers. And I think everything is communicating with us. We just have to be willing to listen. The same lessons keep popping up that is like, what do I need to learn from this today? This keeps happening. Mm-hmm. So I think always listening, always learning. I think that's a good one.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, cool. Well, it's been awesome chatting with you. So if our listeners want to connect with you some more, where can they find you?
The best place to find me would be Facebook. So it's Deanna Price Horsemanship at Shade Tree Stables. I think if you type in Shade Tree Stables, it will just come up. My last name Price is spelled P-R-E-I-S. So don't let that fool you when you type it into the search.
I'll put the link in the show notes too. So people can find it that way.
Yeah. And then I'm Shade Tree Stables, all one word on YouTube and Instagram. But those are the best ways to get me.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you for joining me here today. It's been awesome chatting with you and hearing a little bit more about your experiences with horses and the things you've learned. And yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for hosting me and thank you for just having this platform and just offering this positivity. You know, it's just so refreshing to have different perspectives, but you know, we're not talking about training. We're not talking about problems. We're just talking about the joy that horses bring into our lives. So I think this is beautiful. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Awesome. You're welcome.
Thank you for joining me today. I'd love it if you'd share your thoughts on this podcast in the comments. I always enjoy hearing from our listeners. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider leaving a review and sharing with your friends. If you want to learn more about developing a better partnership with your horse, you can check out our website, tuskydressage.com, or search for Tusky Dressage on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. And you can also sign up for our virtual classroom on Patreon at patreon.com/tuskydressage. And lastly, if you are looking to go even deeper into the lessons our horses have for us, you can check out my book, God's Heart Through a Horse's Eyes, available on Amazon and Amazon Kindle. Thanks again for joining me on Lessons from a Horse, and I'll see you next time.